So in this gospel reading today that's called Jesus' Prayer, Jesus tells us, among other things, that we don't belong to this world. So is that some kind of spiritual escapism? Oh, absolutely not. In fact, it's just the opposite. Jesus calls us into a head-first dive into living for what really, really matters in life. Not our possessions, not our things, not what we've done or accomplished, but a reckless abandon of standing up for love, of standing up for God's ways of grace and forgiveness, of giving life, the values of what Jesus describes as the kingdom of God. Jesus tells us that's where our primary citizenship is, in the kingdom of God. Now, I don't know if you heard it in the beginning of our first reading today from Acts, but I get a kick out of this because it seems like every time the disciples open their mouths, they don't get it. And that's good for us because I don't know about you, but every time I think I don't get it, which is often, I think, oh, good, I'm in good company. The 12 disciples didn't either. So here they are today in Acts. It's their last time talking with Jesus. This is right before the ascension. And the disciples ask him, so, Jesus, is this the time you're going to restore Israel? You've been talking about the kingdom of God all this time, so is it now? Is it going to happen now? Now, Acts doesn't record it, but you can just about hear Jesus sigh. Say, fellas, you're missing the point. You just don't get it. The kingdom of God is not a place. It's not a country. It's not getting Israel back. It is not simply heaven when you die. It is pieces of heaven on earth today. The kingdom of God is always breaking into the world, but it is not a place. It's about love and life. It is seen and felt when you show mercy. So remember how I told you, bless those who persecute you. Forgive those who hurt you. Turn the other cheek. If you have two coats, give one to somebody who has none. Share your food with the hungry. Now the disciples, like everybody else, they were defined by their experience and their expectations. We need to remember that they lived in a time and a place when everybody in Judea where they lived was longing and hoping for Rome to be kicked out, defeated, so that they could get their country back. All they could see was wanting to get Israel back. So when Jesus said kingdom of God, they stopped listening after the word kingdom. They forgot the of God part. And he says kingdom of God, and they said, oh, I know what that is. That's Israel. It's a country. We get it back. We get the capital and the temple back. Now, the disciples are not the only ones who were in that spot. We do this all the time. We become defined by our experience as well. We're no different than the disciples were. The deal is we have dual citizenship. We live very much in this physical, material world where everything is right here in front of our faces. And if we're not careful, we can let that experience alone define our expectations and what we are able to see. And you know how it works. We get a lot of rewards for playing by the ways of the world, don't we? The more we work, the more money we have, the more toys we can buy, the more stuff we have, the more powerful we feel. And the deal is, if we live that way long enough, we start to think, oh, that's what life is about. We fill up in the equivalent of junk food, and we starve our souls into a coma, pretending they aren't even important or real. And then we wonder why God feels so far away. Now, we live in this world of immediate gratification and in the world of the kingdom of God, where Jesus leads us to have a life of meaning, peace, and purpose. It's the difference between living with two versus three dimensions. If all we know is two dimensions of height and width, we can't begin to imagine what depth is. We just don't understand it because we've never seen it. It works kind of like this. Some of you know I'm a little colorblind. The people I work with take great delight in this. Sometimes I come into work and they say, oh, Ruth left before you got dressed, huh? My big problem is red, purple, brown. It's all the same to me. Okay? For about 6 years, Ruth and I had a Honda that I said was purple. We had gotten rid of it, traded it in. Years later, I found out from my wife that it was actually brown. I said, why didn't you tell me? She said, it doesn't matter. It's all the same to you. So, you tell me about those nuances of colors, I have no idea what you're talking about. As far as I'm concerned, you're making it up. If we live in this two-dimensional world, that's all we know. That's all we can see. Our shallow world wants us to settle for height and width. Jesus leads us to experience depth, because that's where real substance and power is. And depth is experienced with sacrifice. With sacrifice. Now remember, this two-dimensional world, it wants us to believe that power is the ability to threaten and kill and destroy, right? But that's not power. Any fool can do that. Real power is the ability to forgive, to give lives back, to create life. Because nobody, nothing can take that from us. So I want to tell you about power. It's opposite from what the world says. There's a young man who's been hanging around the ministry of Bread of Healing and Cross, where we're partners at 16th and Fond du Lac. We'll call him Tim, even though that's not his real name. But Tim shows up about 2 weeks after he was released from prison. He was serving a 4 or 5 year sentence for possession of marijuana. So there he is, released. He's a convicted felon, dropped out of high school, never had a job, had no place to stay. Before he was in prison, he was an addict, and shortly when he was back out, he fell back into the life, and he was an addict again. And he showed up at Bread of Healing on a Wednesday, and I think our folks were cooking that day. Big crowd. And he's there, and Death Row, the neighborhood minister, saw somebody new. And he walked up and sat down with him and heard Tim's story. And Easter said, stay with me. Stick with me and I'll show you how to be a real man, what that's like. So Tim is in recovery now. He's been clean and sober for 18 months. Tim got his GED. He hung out with Easter for about a year and learned how to do things like going to work. Tim is now employed full time. He's a third shift, nighttime security guard at a treatment center in Milwaukee. You did that. Now, you may not have been there physically, but you did that. Now, what is that worth? Can you put a dollar figure on that? What do you suppose it's worth to Tim? Now, here's the contrast. The way of the world has no mercy and grace. It says, well, you blew it. Put him back in jail. The way of grace says, walk with me. Let's find out what redemption looks like. Jesus leads us to have real life by denying ourselves, by giving those things we have to those who need them, by forgiving and loving our neighbors, turning the other cheek and loving our enemies. You may know, the early Christians did this. They cared for the outcasts, the sick, the disabled, widows, orphans, the poor, the dispossessed. And everybody else around them in the Roman Empire, they said, what's with these people? What's with them that they care for all these throwaways? Jesus calls us to live apart from the world while we live in it. There couldn't be a harder balance. If we want to have a life that means more than a balance sheet, it means we need to step out of this two-dimensional shallow world and follow Jesus into a life of depth and substance, living our faith as if we mean it. It means to live for the things that are more valuable than money. It is that feeling that comes with forgiveness and restoring hope. It is the power to give life back after somebody believes they have lost every chance. What's that worth? What would you pay to be free of guilt and regret? You've heard Pastor Jen and me both mention this, but at Confirmation Day, our students who were giving us their statements of faith, at least half of them talked about Mini Work Camp and how they paid a fee to go help elderly and disabled people at home with spring cleaning and repairs and that kind of stuff. And for them, that's how they put the pieces together. And in talking with some of them afterwards, you ask them, what's that worth? And they look at you like you're nuts. What do you mean what it's worth? You can't put a money value on that. No, you can't. Now, of course, our world likes to ask, what's in it for me? Well, let's not be afraid of that question. What is in it for us if we are serious about following Jesus? What's in it for us is it sets us free from the limits of this two-dimensional materialistic world around us and opens us up to new meaning and purpose and an inner peace that nobody can take away. Because you see, every time we forgive, God's love flows through us. And some of it sticks. Every time we help those in need, God's love runs through our veins. Every time we forgive, every time we fight for justice and stand up for what is right, we are changed a little bit. For now, we live with dual citizenship. We have a foot in both worlds. Jesus doesn't want us to ignore that or stick our heads in the sand. He says, oh no, honor that, understand it, believe it, and use it. Now, he doesn't want us to change the whole world. Good luck with that one. Instead, Jesus leads us to touch lives, people, individuals, frequently one at a time, people like Tim and many, many other folks at Hephatha and Cross, who have gotten their lives back. Sometimes we even get to bring hope to communities, bringing the ways of the kingdom of God to the world around us, felt in hope and healing and peace. And when we do, what's in it for us? We get to see what the kingdom of God is like. And we realize it's not a place. It's a verb. It's the way we live. So let's go back to the disciples' question when they didn't get it. Is it now, Jesus? Is this the time you're bringing your kingdom into the world? Yeah. Yes, it is. One person, one life, one community at a time.